Welcome today to our interview series with outstanding professionals. I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and I'm conducting an exclusive interview with Dharmesh Mehta, Director, Windows and Windows Live Division, Microsoft Corp. Dharmesh, I was just looking at your background, and it's just amazing. And, you know, it's a real pleasure for you to, you know, to have you come in and do this interview because you have so much expertise, so many insights that you can share with the audience. So, again, thank you.
No, I'm very happy to do this. Thank you, Stephen.
So, Dharmesh, can you share with our audience how you got into technology starting from your youth?
So, I actually got into technology at a pretty young age. My father actually worked in technology, and so from the age of about six, you know, I was programming. You know, back in the day, it was Logo, or it was programming in the original BASIC, and just started with a kind of love for computers, love for the things you could build that just carried, you know, for years and years, you know, starting originally on more of the technical side as a developer, but then shifting over to the business side and how you build, you know, technology businesses. So it started at a very young age and went from school to job to startup to summer internships to other jobs, and it's kind of just carried through.
Well, you know, I was looking at your educational background, you know, like what, dual bachelor's degrees and electrical engineering and finance. That's quite a mix there. And then master's of engineering and electrical engineering and computer science from MIT, then a master's from Harvard Business School with an MBA. So there's people in our audience who are sort of mid-career and they're looking at maybe going back to school. Can you provide some tips, you know, survival tips or growth tips from your experiences at MIT and from Harvard?
I mean, I think the biggest thing I would tell people is to always know what you're trying to get out of your experiences. You know, whether it's, you know, going to college straight out of high school, it's, you know, you've been working for a number of years and thinking about going back. We've all always got so many different things we can do, whether it's, you know, things you're doing socially, things you're doing academically, things you're doing professionally, and just being super focused on what it is you want to get out of it, how you want to grow, what is the achievement you want to have, and kind of having that as your North Star. That was always very important for me, particularly during those years in Boston when it's just such a vibrant city with so many different things you could do in and out of school.
So what made you decide to sort of have an undergrad degree in electrical engineering and then finance? You know, they're sort of very different kind of domains.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually part of the reason was to get two very, very different functional domains, but both very important to technology businesses. So it was, how do I bridge between a deep understanding of, you know, how products work, how things are built, being able to code up software applications, services, all the way to design circuits. But then on the flip side, you know, how do you make money out of that? How do you think about a corporate structure? How do you think about financing? How do you think about M&A? And so both very important but very different sides of the business. And I, you know, when I go back to, you know, knowing what it is you want to get out of those experiences, for me it was, how do I build more of that general management mindset and get exposed to many different sides of the same coin?
I see, and I can see that continuing when you went for your master's. You sort of have the master's on the engineering side, and then you have the master's on the business side as well. So
yeah, and then I think I've done enough degrees now, so...
Well, yeah, you've done well. I mean, MIT and Harvard, so that's pretty elite. Now, can you talk about your roles at Microsoft and what key lessons and success stories you want to share with the audience?
Yep, so when I first came to Microsoft, actually, when I first came here a very long time ago, I worked here for a summer as a developer back in the day. But then when I came here full-time, I actually worked in our corporate strategy group. And the corporate strategy group was kind of tasked with, how do we, as a company, look for new businesses, new areas to go expand into with really kind of a 3 to 5 year horizon? And so I was back in this group about 5 years ago, and we worked on a project around, you know, should we extend from the kind of traditional on-premise exchange offering we had for email and expand into the hosted email space? And that kind of became the precursor to us getting into Microsoft Online and our hosted exchange offering. And the thing that was very important then, that continued to be very important as I moved from that corporate strategy group into the Windows Live business, was really just having this end-to-end thinking. Meaning, you know, even when you're sitting there doing strategy projects, you know, you could put together a nice pretty deck and talk about the industry and the trends and, you know, in a very academic fashion talk about a strategy. But that strategy was only effective and would only really have market impact if you could think about it end-to-end, meaning what are the people systems we're going to have to build? What are the changes in culture? How are we going to change our sales channels? How are we going to think about our pricing model and our P&L? And thinking through all of those pieces end-to-end was very important. And I'd say that lesson and kind of that mentality has continued to be very true as I moved from corporate strategy into the Windows Live division, where I've been for the last 3 years, where I sit in the product management org in the business group. But again, you have to think end-to-end all the way from, you know, what's the product we're delivering? How do we position that? How do we take that to market? How do we scale that through a global and an international field? How do we think about press and influencers versus broad consumers? How are those bleeding more and more every day? But again, it is very much that end-to-end from inception all the way to execution.
Yeah, what I find really quite interesting in your background is that sort of full spectrum from strategy, but really a good focus on execution as well. And that's hard to find when you have both the vision and the implementation coming together in one person.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes it can be hard to find. I think it's sometimes also just not what everyone's interested in. I know many individuals who are, you know, hey, I just want to do creative campaigns and do marketing all day long. Or actually last weekend I was at a friend's house who's a developer here at Microsoft, and all he wants to do is write code. He doesn't want to, you know, think about design. He doesn't want to think about, you know, sales strategies. He just wants to write code and write good code. And so I think it's, you know, different types of people like different types of things. But for me, definitely have a little of that interest in the diversity.
You know, you've got these sort of tenure at Microsoft. You've got this great educational background. So you must have a good handle on what are the attributes that are required to be successful at Microsoft. Can you list some of them?
So some of the big things I talk about, you know, Microsoft's obviously a big company with many different types of businesses. But I think across all of them, in some sense, there's a couple of characteristics that are very important. One, I just, you know, at the foundation, we're a technology company about our products, right? So you got to have a great passion for technology products. They have to get you excited. You have to find them interesting. Whether you're coding them, marketing them, selling them, whatever you're doing, you got to be passionate about technology. The second thing is we take a very long-term approach. And when I say long-term, I don't mean 10 years out. Sometimes it's 10 years. But I mean we're not trying to flip things out and trying to make a quick buck over the next week or the next month or the next 3 months. We're thinking about how do we have a sustained business that will last multiple years. And so there's this notion of a medium to long-term orientation to the businesses we're trying to build. And I think inherent in that, we're often going after customer value, partner value that really is a drive for huge results, right? So I've actually the last thing I did before Microsoft was work in a small startup. And, you know, there, you know, you're just trying to get to the first 100,000 users. Then you're trying to get to the first 1,000,000 users. And when you hit that, you know, 10 million users, you feel like you've done the most amazing thing. At Microsoft, you know, when you're building consumer businesses, you're thinking about the 100 million, the 500 million. How do you get to the billion? And that's kind of the scope of impact you want to be having. And so I think that drive for huge results, huge amount of impact, and kind of the end customer value is very important here, too. And then the last two things I talk about is just, you know, to be effective when you're thinking about how do you have big impact over the long term, you've got to have great communication, whether that's written, whether that's oral, or both, but you got to be able to effectively communicate your ideas, and you've got to be able to work collaboratively, right? You can't have a one-man show that's going to build a business that has 500 million users. You've got to figure out how you work with others, how you work across many different disciplines and different functions, and have that team spirit, collaborative approach.
You know, when I asked the question, I was asking for the attributes to be successful at Microsoft, but really those are the attributes to be successful in any organization.
I would say they are true in many organizations. I think there's certain characteristics there that are probably a little bit more unique to Microsoft. I think the size and scale of the type of impact we want to have, as well as a bit of the long-term orientation, are definitely a bit more unique that I've seen at Microsoft versus other firms I've worked with.
So outside of Microsoft, what are you passionate about?
I mean, I think big things for me, family is always very important, whether that's, you know, my wife, siblings, parents, things like that. I spend a lot of time with family, with friends. Other hobbies of mine, I mean, I spend a bunch of time just traveling. Every chance I get, you know, we're trying to go visit some new international country we've never been to. I enjoy playing volleyball. Big fan of wine and trying out new wines. So things like that, a little bit all over the place. But
I see. So you have an eclectic nature about you.
Definitely.
Okay, let's talk about Windows Live, because that's really a major focus point right now for you within Microsoft. What has Windows Live recently released, and why is this cool and useful?
So as many of you probably know, Windows Live is kind of a collection of apps for your PC, mobile experiences, web experiences. So I'll talk about a couple different things. Just starting with, our two biggest products, Hotmail and Messenger. So on Hotmail, there's been a huge release that actually today just finished rolling out to our over 1 billion mailboxes. About 360 million of those are actively being used every month. Big things we've done there, the Office web apps, so Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, fully web-based, are completely integrated into Hotmail. We've added this notion of active use so that, when you get links in your email, you no longer have to click through three browser screens and see just kind of a silly-looking link that you don't know what's there. We just take that link, turn it into the content, so you can view that photo slideshow, you can see the shipping updates, you can watch a movie right there in your inbox. So again, this notion of just how do we make you a lot more efficient. And then even cool things like, when people want to share photos today, you've got that 12-megapixel camera, and so you're sending three or four attachments per, email, and you've got to send 16 emails now to show your photos. With the new Hotmail, you literally just start uploading those files, and because you have this huge SkyDrive that can store up to 25 gigabytes of photos, you can just send all of those photos in one email. So again, just how do we make Hotmail a lot more efficient? On the Messenger side, Messenger has been an interesting release for us. It's currently in beta. We released it in beta about a month and a half ago. And then a little bit later this year, that'll be coming out of beta as we get more feedback from folks like you guys. But big change in Messenger has been, Messenger has always historically been, kind of best way to have chat and real-time conversations with your close friends. And so we've done a lot around that. That is, how do we add, high-definition video chat? How do we let you have a video chat while you're playing a game or sharing photos or doing other things so you can see someone's face when you show them that picture, from last weekend where you fell down, or a picture of your new child? But we also took a big shift in this release of Messenger of, it's the fact that your closest friends don't just chat and have real-time conversations. You also do a lot of things on social networks and photo sharing sites and professional networks. And you're up, writing blogs on sites like WordPress and things like that. And how do we help you stay in touch, and up to date with all those things? And then one thing that, on Messenger that's, in some senses a small thing, but, people have asked for a long time, is we had a tab conversation. We added access to your favorites in the jump list. And so it's, again, how do we make it a little bit faster to get in touch with those people that matter most? Those are kind of the two biggest customer bases we have in Windows Live. Both of those, over 300 million users. But then, even some of our smaller apps like Photo Gallery, Movie Maker, SkyDrive, that each have, 50 million, 100 million users, a lot of different things. So on Photo Gallery, there's a lot of enhancements to what we like to call, has traditionally been pretty advanced functionality, but how we're trying to make that really easy for people. So you take a bunch of photos, someone might have a blemish or a cut or a pimple or something. How do you easily just retouch that photo and get rid of that blemish? You're at a party, maybe you're at a wedding, and you're taking group photos, and you have to take five photos because everyone is closing their eye or turning the wrong way in one of the photos. Well, we have this new thing called Photo Fuse. How do you take all those pictures, literally fuse them together, and get the best parts of each picture? With Movie Maker, people are taking a lot of these photos and videos and trying to, create a video slideshow. How do we have a capability called Auto Movie that'll just grab all those photos, videos, instantly put them together, add transitions, take the captions from your photos, make them into titles, take the tags, turn them into credits, and, literally with one or two clicks, you've got a movie. And of course, you can customize it, but we're taking all these advanced functionality and really just making it easy for people. The last thing I'll talk about is just sync. More and more people have many devices. They have multiple PCs in their home. And one of the problems is you've got, some photos on this one, you've got some videos on another one, you've got your music on a third one, and they just get out of control. You have different IE favorites, you have different office settings, and you have to keep redoing all of these or copying the files over. Sync literally up to a million files, up to 40 gigabytes each, so you got 40 petabytes of content that you can literally sync between your PCs. I don't know anyone that's managed to mount that much hard drive space onto their PC, but you can literally just keep all this content in sync, and it's just all happening in the background, whether it's your files, it's your IE settings, it's office settings, all that kind of stuff. So, that's just That was maybe a little bit lengthy, but that's just actually a very quick summary of many of the things we've released over the last 3 months, and a lot more coming in the next few.
Well, you know, you just mentioned there's some more things coming, so I'm really excited. I mean, you know, the features and the value that you're delivering is just, I mean, I can see the immediate benefits. Well, what should we be looking for in the coming months with Windows Live?
A couple things I'll tell you about, and a couple things I'll have to say there'll be surprises coming. But a couple things that we're excited about that are coming. So first, if you look at Messenger, you know, I talked a little bit about how we're bringing together all your networks. There's a lot of deep integration we're doing with the biggest social networks, and so Facebook is fully integrated in today. Two of the other big ones that are coming, we're bringing in MySpace, we're bringing in LinkedIn into Messenger. But the other thing we're doing is it's not just all those social feeds. If you think about the two largest networks in the world today, you have Messenger, which has been traditionally a lot more optimized around chat, and you have Facebook, which is actually bigger than Messenger from a number of users, but there's less chat usage, but it's a larger number of people who are doing a lot more just traditional social networking. One of the things we'll be bringing out actually in the next couple of weeks is bringing those two chat networks together. So when you're sitting in Messenger, not only can you chat with those 300 million people on Messenger, you can also chat with the 500 million that are on Facebook. So that'll be it's a very valuable thing for consumers. It's also been a very interesting engineering problem when you think about just the size and scale of those two networks. On the Hotmail side, a couple of the big things coming. First, from a security enhancement perspective, there's a bunch of stuff. One of the big things people have asked for is SSL. And so Hotmail will go to full SSL encryption. But the thing, you know, and some people are very excited about that. The thing I'm more excited about with Hotmail is actually Exchange Active Sync. So, you know, a lot of smartphones today, pretty much all smartphones, come with Exchange Active Sync so that you can get your contacts, your calendar, your email, all fully synced while you're on the go. And so Hotmail will work just as well as like a professional Exchange solution for businesses. Right into your phone. And more phones actually are now dual EAS, so you can have both your work email and your personal email both coming in. Your calendars get merged, your contacts get merged, so you can see one view of things. And then there's a lot more that we'll be announcing over the next couple months.
You know, I really deal with a lot of executives and professional workers and people in business and so on, and I know that you know, the Windows Live environment is targeted to PCs, web, and mobile consumers, but there's also all of these enterprise workers out there or workers who are working in small and medium-sized businesses, and they're looking at Windows Live or they're employing Windows Live. So how does this kind of tie in, using Windows Live at home and on the road and at work?
I guess there's two things I would talk about, Stephen. The first is everyone who's a person at work who works in an enterprise or small and medium business, although they're a professional and an enterprise user, they're also a consumer. Everyone's also a consumer when you're away from work, when you're at home, when you're with your family and friends. And so Windows Live obviously is great for all of those things, just when you're acting like a normal consumer in some sense. But on the second hand, we realize that there's many of these people who, in some sense, they have, work contacts and work relationships and work data and files and settings and all that stuff. And then they have personal ones. And you don't always want your personal photos to show up at work. And I'm sure many businesses don't want all your work content showing up in front of your friends. So there's a balance there on how you integrate them. The notion we've taken across many of our things is you want communication to be able to flow across those networks. They shouldn't feel like two silos. You should be able to email someone at their work email address, obviously. In the same way, you should be able to IM someone. And so Messenger for consumers and Office Communicator, which is what a lot of enterprises use, should be able to talk to each other. Of course, you should be able to chat and be able to see presence when people are online. One of the things we just released about a month ago was it's not just text chat, it's also voice and video. So I can have an HD video chat with you, see your face, just as, just connecting these communication networks. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it, I'd say, is things should look and feel the same. So the way you email someone, the way you have files in folders, the way your apps look, your calendar looks, the way you chat with someone, these apps should just look similar so that, you know where to find things, the user experience is similar. Even all the way to the extreme, I'd say Office web apps. Office is the same, right? Word looks the same, whether you're using the client app, whether you're using it on the web. You know what the ribbon is. You know how to use that. And so those experiences are very, very similar. And then the third thing I'd say is you have, you know, a set of work email and you have a set of personal email, and you have a set of work contacts and a set of personal contacts. And although you don't want those munged together, you don't want your corporate address book and your personal address book to become one unified thing, you'd like to use them as one thing, so that if you have a coworker named Harrison and you have a friend named Harrison and they're the same person, you want to see Harrison just once, right? And you want to see his work phone number and his personal phone number, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So there's two big places we do that. On your PC, we do that into Outlook with Outlook Connector. An Outlook Connector will pull in your Hotmail contacts, calendar, email, et cetera, into Outlook so that you can see it just like your work email, just like your work contacts, et cetera, on your PC. And then to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, with Exchange Active Sync, you can do the same thing on your smartphone. So that, you know, again, I see Harrison as one person on my phone. I've got all the different phone numbers, different ways to reach him, because I want that kind of one combined view of Harrison, because he's one person.
So it sounds like there's a lot of flexibility for the enterprise worker, for the small and medium-sized business worker, who is also a consumer.
Definitely. I mean, it's a very important thing for us. You know, when you look at Microsoft as a business, there we do this in many places, and it's actually a very explicit design decision, which is, you know, we build Exchange for enterprises and we build Hotmail for consumers. We have Messenger for consumers. We have Office Communicator for enterprises, SharePoint and SkyDrive. There's many of these analogies where there are certain features that a typical consumer probably doesn't worry about SOX compliance and doesn't worry about logging and doesn't worry about, you know, CRM and ERP integration. At the same time, email at some level is email, and you want to know how to be able to use it. You want to be able to email someone across these networks. And they shouldn't be silos. And so there's a lot of work we do with the enterprise side of the Microsoft to make sure these fit together well for, you know, the average person.
So do you have any stories about how people are using specific components and features of Windows Live to make their lives more meaningful?
Let me talk about a couple related to some of our PC apps. You know, first I'll just talk about Messenger. And a funny story from one of the guys that used to work for me, this guy, Lon Lee, one of Lon's best friends in Toronto, they all used to use Messenger a ton. And he actually met this woman who he then started dating, and their relationship actually started over Messenger. And the reason I bring up this story is Messenger's kind of always been for those meaningful, you know, conversations. It's not the, like, how do I have a quick text chat? It's much more, how do I have a long, meaningful conversation, show some photos, see someone's face. And so his friend met his girlfriend, then became his fiance, and they were leading up to their wedding. And Messenger was kind of their notion of, hey, that's where we had our first date, because that's where we started flirting, and that's kind of how we got together. And so as they were approaching their wedding, just, you know, funny story about how Messenger is that place for meaningful conversations. The weekend before their wedding, they scheduled a date on Messenger, right? And it literally was a let's have a chat on Messenger, and it was kind of a romantic event for them. And I find that an interesting story just because, again, it's about how do you provide, you know, what is just, it's a set of code and it's a set of technology, but it's that foundation for a meaningful relationship, meaningful conversation. So that's kind of the first story I tell you, a little bit more humorous. But in the same way, Messenger helps with those kind of long-distance relationships. And so one of the engineers who works on our video chat feature is actually from Turkey. And so the bulk of his family's there. And so same thing. It's a great way for him to just, how do you see your friends and family in real time, high quality experience, while you're sharing photos or playing games. And it can feel like I could be next door, or I could be a mile down the street, even though he's literally just about on the opposite end of the world. And then the last one, I'll give you a personal story just on how my wife used a couple of our apps to do something that was pretty funny. My sister recently had her birthday, and they had asked everyone to send in a little, you know, video of, you know, saying happy birthday or a little interesting clip from something you've done. And my wife recorded a bunch of video with our webcam, then took it and basically grabbed a bunch of photos, grabbed the video, and created a montage that was like a parody of a Lady Gaga video. Took Windows Live Movie Maker, click, 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 recorded her voice, slapped the sound on top, and then put it up on YouTube, you know, one click published to YouTube. And it was just a very easy way to take a bunch of photos and videos, add her own soundtrack, and create an interesting little viral video. And so many, many different, you know, applications for how people are using these. I gave you, you know, a spectrum from the, you know, a little bit more serious of long-distance relationships and kind of marriages, all the way to the humorous things where you're just trying to create a funny video you want to share with friends. But there's a broad spectrum here for what people are doing.
And what I'm also hearing that it's really about the user experience, and it's just such a satisfying, seamless kind of experience and sort of sharing their lives with the world or with their family members.
Yep. Now, it is at the core of these has to be, hey, it has to go from being a functional tool. That's just kind of required. It has to work. But the thing that really delights people is how is it personal? How does it evoke emotion? How do they look at this and, you know, associate Messenger with this is how I met my wife, and I have this emotional connection to this product and this brand. Very important.
I'm always amazed at the size of the audiences. You know, they're like, they would rank amongst the biggest countries in the world. You know, you're talking about hundreds of millions. Can we get some more specifics on that? For example, how many people are using Windows Live today, and who is using Windows Live and why, and how have you seen this usage grow, and for what reasons?
So today, Windows Live has over 500 million users who are actively using our product. So, you know, there are billions of people that at some point have registered or maybe registered a second or third account. I'm not talking about number of accounts. I'm talking about individual people. There's 500 million people. Which is roughly about half of all internet users around the world, and it literally is around the world. We pretty much have people in just about every country who are using our product, and that, you know, to what we talked about a little bit earlier, the two biggest products that people are using are Hotmail and Messenger. Messenger having about 300 million active users every month, Hotmail about 360 million. And then some of our other products, you know, vary from 50 to 100 million, and then you kind of deduplicate all of those, and you get a little bit over 500 million active users. When you think about who those people are, they've really evolved from a couple places. You know, again, some of those Hotmail and Messenger users have literally been with us for, you know, Messenger's over 10 years old now. Hotmail is over 13 years old. And there's a number of them that have been there since the start. But a lot of that growth is really, you know, over the last, you know, I'd say couple years. And it comes from a couple different angles. You know, first is just new internet users. People in a ton of countries, even in very developed countries like a lot of Europe and the U.S., there's still a lot of people coming online. And that's even huger as you get into some of the emerging markets like Russia and India and China. And so it's those new internet users, whether they're on their PC or their mobile device, ton of people there. The second thing that's a big driver for us is not only are more and more people coming online, but they're actually spending a lot more time online. The amount of time that, you know, you look at teens that, you know, back in the day used to get together in person or they'd go to the mall or things like that, they still do some of that, but they're actually spending a lot more time just texting, spending time on their PC, doing homework on their PC, et cetera, et cetera. And then the last avenue for us is obviously, you know, taking share from competitors. And there's two things that have happened. One, you know, you look at the email and the IM and the social networking category, and all of these, in some sense, are consolidating. A lot of the smaller players, when you look at the infrastructure required, the investment required to provide a great experience, there are industries that don't lend themselves to having hundreds and hundreds of different players that could have compelling solutions. And so there's some consolidation that occurred. And then two, you know, as you'd expect, we have competitors, and we're all trying to take share from each other, and so that provides a avenue of growth for us as well.
I guess it sort of leads to this next question, and that is, how is usage growing in the next 3 years in the different regions of the world, for example, North America versus Latin America versus the European Union versus Asia itself? And as you indicated, you're seeing some growth in things like Russia or in India and in China. And I understand now there's something like, 400 million people online in China, and there's 4 billion mobile phones worldwide. So what does this mean in terms of growth in these various regions?
Yeah, so I mean, I think you've alluded to a bit of it, right, which is just in emerging markets, there's definitely more growth, both in terms of number of users, amount of time, and a much heavier skew towards mobile. If you look at some of the more developed markets like North America or parts of Europe, you still see some growth in number of new people coming online, and you see some growth in the amount of time they're spending. The bigger growth in those developed markets is mobile, again, relative to PC, but it's nowhere near what you're seeing in a lot of the emerging markets. It's a interesting geographic footprint when you look at it, because the developed markets as a whole, minus, you know, if you took out China and India, The developed markets are much larger than the rest of the emerging markets. The emerging markets have much more new growth, and then China and India, in some sense, are just so huge, and China in particular, given the relative maturity of its internet internet infrastructure, is by and away, in some senses, just a unique situation. Huge, still in some senses considered an emerging market, but I believe in the next year or so, China will sell more PCs than any other country in the world, and mobile phones are far and away already blowing away.
Right. There's something like, I guess close to 700 mobile users in China.
Yeah, 700 million. That's probably about right.
Now, you know, there's competition out there, and let's say I'm using another kind of email service. Why would I want to switch to Hotmail?
So I just start with, you know, there's kind of, you have to get the fundamentals right, and then it's how do you do just amazing things that nobody else will do. And so the fundamentals, the biggest one on email is true spam, right? You know, you talk to people about spam, and they think lots and lots of things are spam. There's a small set of those that are real spam. It's the Viagra email, it's the Nigerian Prince, it's the Cialis, it's et cetera, et cetera. And Hotmail and actually Gmail are pretty much on par with each other as the best in the industry. And so that's kind of like fundamentals. You have to get the spam out, you got to get your performance up, you got to have a user experience that people like find easy to use, et cetera. That's kind of the basics, and I feel like Hotmail is great there. Kind of with Gmail is pretty much the best in the world in the category. But then that's not really what excites people. That's not what draws people in. That kind of gives you permission to play games, right? And so the things on Hotmail that I think really excite people is, you know, when you ask people what spam is, there's a lot of other stuff people think of as spam. It's all those newsletters that at some point I gave someone my email address, and so now they keep sending me. It's my bank statements. It's my real estate alert because I was looking for a house 7 years ago, and all those things that are cluttering up my inbox that any other email service in the world is still trying to figure out, you know, how do they handle these? Do they try and get you to call them junk? Do you want some of them but you don't want others? Maybe you want to file them away. Maybe you want to never get them. And it's kind of a mess. And I think Hotmail, with this latest release, does a better job of how you help get rid of that other clutter, kind of the gray mail that we often call it, better than anyone. And so we've got this new capability called Sweep. It's literally, hey, I've got that statement from Bank of America. I don't want this cluttering on my inbox, but I'd love to save these because I may need to look back at them 6 years from now. How do I sweep them right out of my inbox into a bank statements folder? How do I take all those alerts coming from some tea company that I actually don't care about and instantly get rid of them, and not just get rid of them today, but get rid of them forever? So anytime I get them, they're just gone from my inbox. So that kind of, hey, how do we help people be efficient? That's one way. The second way, I mean, I talked a little bit earlier, this notion we call active use, meaning you get a lot of email that has just links in it. It's a link to a Flickr album. It's a link to a, you know, United States Postal Service tracking number. I mean, all these things that, you know, traditionally you don't really know what that content is. You probably have to click on the link. You might have to go sign in somewhere else. Then you click through a couple more links, and you finally get to the tracking status, or you finally get to the album, or you finally get to the video that you were trying to watch. So these active views are, how do we help just get that content that you want and bring it right into your inbox? So when you get that YouTube URL, instead of seeing just a URL, you actually see the video, you can click play and watch it right there. How do I show you the tracking information? With one click, you can see exactly where the package is, not having to jump through all those browser windows. So that active use, again, great way to just make you more efficient. The other two things I talk about that I mentioned earlier that I just think for Hotmail are very awesome and exciting a ton of people. First is Exchange Active Sync, and how do you have that push email experience that really today, the only way you can get something that good across your calendar, contacts, and email is to go by Exchange. And so when Hotmail gives you that for free, that's very impressive, and that's rolling out in just a little bit. And the second is Office Web Apps. Again, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote for free, 100% full viewing, editing that makes sense in a browser, all of it without having to worry about do your friends have this installed or not, what version do they have, anything like that, all fully integrated into your Hotmail inbox. So those are just, you know, a couple of the things that I think, you know, you have to get those fundamentals right, but then there's a bunch of things in Hotmail that I think nobody else is doing quite as well as we are.
You know, there's a lot of users of instant messaging, but some say, like in countries like the U.S., it just isn't as popular as it should be. So what's the value of an app like Messenger in a country like the U.S.?
Yeah, so when I think about the U.S. and the IM category, IM in many sense, and it's happening in the U.S., it's starting to happen in other countries too. IM is, in some sense, and just core chat, is really just a feature. So whether you're sitting in your IM app, or you're in your email, or you're up on a social network, or you're on your phone, you want to be able to chat with people. Sometimes you do that through text chat, sometimes you do it through SMSs, but it's really just a feature. The interesting pivot that Messenger has and kind of the value, particularly in a country like the U.S., is how Messenger isn't just an IM app, it's really your people app. You know, because especially in countries like the U.S. where there's even greater numbers of different networks, different sites that all of us are using. So, for instance, I use Facebook, I use Flickr, but my friend Harrison uses WordPress a bunch, that's where he writes his blog. Well, today we have a problem because I care about Harrison and I want to know what he's doing, but I don't use WordPress regularly and I often miss his updates. And then my wife, she might use SmugMug to post her photos. And same thing, when she's posting photos, I want to see those, but I don't always remember to go to SmugMug. And so she's got to send me notifications of, here, go check this out. Then I've got to check SmugMug and WordPress, and I've got all my Flickr and Facebook stuff and all my Messenger updates. And that's kind of a mess, right? And so Messenger in the U.S. as well as everywhere, but it's particularly important in a country like the U.S., really becomes that people app for Windows. So how do we bring all of this content together? How do we prioritize those things that are from your close friends, close family, the people you care about? And it's an always-on social app, meaning you get notifications the instant things happen. You can see rich views. You can take advantage of the graphics capabilities of a PC, beautiful slideshows, commenting, real-time notifications, all that kind of stuff. That you just can't do nearly as well in a browser today.
You know, I can sense your excitement about the products and you know, the services and just sort of the feel that it provides to the user out there, to the consumer, and also to those enterprise workers. Now, what else are you most excited about?
I guess I'll just add one more, and then a little bit in line with the last thing I was talking about. You know, there's a real problem today in that in some sense, there's all this social data being generated in all these different places, and there's a bit of overload. And it's, you know, I have a hard time keeping up with the things I care about while not getting flooded with all the things I don't. And so there's also this little add-in we've created for Internet Explorer called Messenger Companion. And the reason I like Messenger Companion is because, again, there's all that clutter and noise that's out there. Messenger's already doing all this work to help bring it together. But the companion is just smart about that as I browse the web. And so if I go up to CNN.com, today when I go to CNN.com, I see the editorial that CNN's put on there. CNN's doing a lot of hard work to try and make that most relevant as well as they can for me. But the fact of the matter is, if you go through my Messenger feeds or my Facebook feeds or my Flickr feeds or all these different places, my Twitter, my Bitly, et cetera, there's probably content in there that refers to a CNN story that one of my friends shared. Today, that gets lost. And again, I have no way of knowing whether there's something there or there isn't. Well, Messenger Companion is this little add-in, and what it'll tell me when I get to CNN.com is, hey, did you know that your friend Lon shared a story from CNN.com? And it'll just put up a little toast and a little pop-up and say, hey, did you know? Do you want to click and see it? And if not, you know, you just turn it off. You don't need to see it. But again, I find that so valuable because it's the only place you'll find someone taking all that content across all these sites and helping surface, hey, here's something one of your friends has done. Let me see it. Let me see the article. Let me be able to comment right back, right into that stream of updates. And so again, just very easy way to help you kind of cut through all that mess and find the interesting stories that are contextually relevant to what I was doing. I was up on CNN.com. I probably care about CNN.com. I clearly care about that friend. And how do you connect those?
Well, that's very exciting. And again, I just love the energy that you know, when you talk about these services. You know, we're down to the last part of our interview now, and I'm going to move to some more general questions. So we're going to leave Windows Live.
Yeah.
So what would be some resources that you would recommend to support professionals in their work?
I mean, it's interesting because when you look at a lot of these, I'm going to step back a little bit to Windows Live and just, you know, if you're a support professional, you obviously got an email, you've got an IM, and you want to be able to have conversations with people. Hotmail, Messenger, great for those. One we didn't talk a bunch about, SkyDrive. SkyDrive gives you 25 gigabytes of online storage. It's kind of like your hard drive in the cloud, and you can take that hard drive and have folders that are just for you or folders you're going to share with people. And so when I think about a support professional and how you share content, you know, grab screenshots of what someone's done and things like that, SkyDrive is great for that. Costs nothing. It's completely free. Share with the world. Share with three people. Share with just yourself, however you want to manage it. And then I'll add just one more item that we didn't talk much about, which is, you know, I get this a lot with my family, where I'm effectively the tech support for the family, because everyone figures, hey, you work at Microsoft, so when my computer breaks or I can't figure out how to get this, you know, new app that I downloaded to work, you're the guy I call. Today, it's a painful experience. You know, you sit there on the phone and you ask what button they're pushing. You don't know exactly what app they're using. It's not so easy. But when I talked about Windows Live Sync earlier, Windows Live Sync also has this remote desktop capability. And what it lets you do is basically go in and see the screen of another PC as if you were sitting there, right? And so you can completely control the screen, control the mouse, and click around. And it's a tool that today is available in a lot of enterprises, but there's no way for consumers to do this really easily. And so with this new remote desktop, I can literally go into my, you know, parents' computer or my aunt's computer, and when they're looking for tech support, it's kind of the easiest way for me to go in and see what's going on our PC. And when I think about a support professional, great tool for them, again, because I just think about everyone looking at them for help and just much easier way to do it.
Now, here's a sort of a question that's a bit in sort of from the side, I guess. And, you know, there's this whole concept of IT as a professional, as a profession, you know, like in medicine or law, engineering, and so on. And there's this concept of what we call IT professionalism, which is around IT as a profession, as a recognized profession. Do you have any comments on that?
I guess the only things I would comment on, so ironically, my wife's actually in the healthcare profession. And so it's been interesting to watch, you know, as she went through her training and then has gone into her career, and kind of the programs they have around, you know, professional standards, standards of conduct, regulations around that, and kind of the expectations there. And the thing that I found interesting is when I look at IT professionals and I think about the scale of impact we have, the level of whether it's personal or corporate data, the privacy implications that all of us are dealing with every day. You know, and I think about how you design data centers and how you create separation between what people can see or not see, what they have access to, but still at the same time, you know, have great tools to manage that. I'm frequently surprised that there aren't more, you know, I don't know if you'd call them standards, but it's more regulation, it's more clarity on what IT professionalism is, what code of conduct there should be. It definitely is an area I'm surprised there isn't more inertia around.
So it sounds like you're supportive of having sort of a code of ethics, professional standards, you know, an attempt to create this sort of profession of IT.
Yep. And I think on IT, I mean, every profession is a little bit different. And so there's probably areas around this where I agree there should be more kind of code of conduct and more policies and principles that, you know, as an industry we're adopting. And then there are probably areas that are less relevant. And so, you know, whether you look at healthcare or accounting, there's definitely, you know, dealing with people's personal medical records goes to some extreme, but, you know, it's probably not a far day from now when a lot of our medical records are sitting in some IT database. And so I think it's a very important area to make sure we as an industry are doing a good job at.
On Armesh, you're perfectly situated as this sort of visionary executive who's got this amazing background, has great accomplishments, has done so much from a strategy, implementation, execution standpoint, has a great educational background as well. So I'm thinking, hey, if anybody can predict the future, it's going to be Armesh. So can you provide your top predictions for the future?
Crystal ball gazing, always a little fun. So let me give you maybe a couple things that I think we're starting to see the starts of, but I think will go far further, and then talk a little bit about a couple things that I think will happen that are probably, you know, further out in the 5-ish year time frame. But in the short term, a couple things that, you know, started to pick up that I think are just going to go gangbusters. First, just social gaming. We're seeing growth of that, you know, whether it's like the number of people playing Farmville and other Zynga games, or it's the other online gaming sites that have existed for a long time that are just becoming more social. I think that is an area that will continue to explode. I think I remember back when I'd looked at some Windows data, just of the amount of time people spent on their PC playing games 5 years ago when they were completely not social. And there were a lot of just single-player games or find a random person. And as that becomes social, I just think that's going to completely explode. The second is there's today a bunch of startups and small companies that are trying to do this, but this really hasn't gone mainstream yet. And I expect over the next couple of years, we'll see the mobile location-based and augmented reality experiences. Someone's going to figure out what is that killer app that actually 200 million people want to use and not just, you know, the 10 million tech enthusiasts. And then the third thing, and we're just, again, at the very early starts of this. You know, PCs 10 years ago were a desktop machine, and then they evolved into you had your desktop and your laptop. And then today, you know, you've got some TVs that are kind of, you know, PCs, and you've got refrigerators that might even have a smart screen. You've got slates, and you've got tablets. But I think, you know, next couple of years, again, PCs are going to diversify even more, where a PC could be anything from, you know, literally my window showing me different images to, you know, that slate to the tablet to my remote control to just tons and tons of devices that will look very different from a traditional laptop or desktop. So those are three that I'd probably say in the next couple years I think there'll be a lot of momentum around. Two things that probably will take, I think, you know, even a little bit longer. One, maybe 3 to 5 years. I think in the same way PCs will diversify, the display and input technology will change. So, you know, we had kind of keyboard and mouse, we've had that forever. Touch is picking up a bit here, but when I think about the role of speech, the role of automatically detecting who someone is, when I think about the role of RFID, when I think about, you know, facial recognition, that kind of stuff, that's probably 3 to 5 years-ish. I think that'll start to go mainstream. And then the last one, this is probably, might be personal passion interest, is just the notion of robots, right? Today, the only place you find robots really in the home is by and large Roombas, and then you see some robots and, you know, that are going a little bit more mainstream in, you know, nursing homes where it might be a stuffed animal or something that provides comfort to the elderly, or it's a robot that's a little bit more popular in Japan and South Korea. But I actually, when I think about robots, I don't necessarily think of, you know, the robot from the Jetsons that's walking around, but I think about robotic devices in the home that are, you know, going around, providing information, talking to people. It is helping get things done, cleaning up the house, chopping your vegetables. I don't know what it is. But in the next 5 to 10 years, that's maybe more hope than a prediction, but seeing that go a little bit more mainstream.
You know, you talked about social gaming. So do you see this Kinect product from Microsoft being sort of contributing to sort of the next evolution of that? Because it has, and it seems like a magical kind of world, you know, formerly called Project Natal, but now called Kinect.
Yeah, so I think Kinect will be an interesting player there in a very different way than when people are traditionally think of social gaming today. They think of, I took a game and I added my social graph to it so I can play with my social networking friends and I can share out who beat who on my social network. And I think Kinect's going to provide, and if you haven't tried it out, I recommend you get to a, you know, somewhere we're demoing it out or get to a store as they come in and try it out. And it's just a very different experience. And when you think about, like, hey, how do you detect people take their actions and insert them into a game, the fundamental concepts there of kind of people detection, motion detection, face detection, emotion, and then being able to place that in an alternate reality enables a bunch of possibilities that will be, I think there'll be a lot of interesting scenarios to come there, not just this holiday when it first releases, but when I think about the next release and the next release of that product, I'm very bullish.
I can see corporations actually buying this as a communication product so they could communicate amongst the different sort of sites.
Yeah. It's definitely a interesting scenario. I mean, we're with that product, we started very much on the consumer and kind of casual gaming side, but I definitely think at some point we'll bridge it over to the enterprise.
You know, you talked about, you know, some of the predictions in the short and medium term. Do you ever sort of think, you know, 10, 20 years out, like, or maybe 20 years out with Kurzweil's, this concept of a singularity, sort of this amalgamation or merging of human intelligence and machine intelligence?
Only in debates with friends. I have almost a cadre of people who are convinced it will happen and a cadre are convinced it won't. I think for me, the place I find it most interesting, I mean, even in what Kurzweil does himself with his own personal healthcare, and looking at how aging affects us and how you think about human lifespan and, you know, when do you think about retiring, when do you think about, you know, in many industries, You talk about knowledge development and kind of professional expertise and how it often takes a number of years. And then by the time people really become experts at something, the industry changes and or the person becomes older and starts retiring and you lose a lot of that knowledge. And so how does that extend when, you know, the average, you know, lifespan isn't 70 or 80 years and it's now 150 years or 200 years? How does, like, society evolve? How do we handle that number of people with our current infrastructure, right, and the amount of land we have, particularly in dense populated cities? So it's not one I spend a lot of time seriously from a work perspective thinking about, but certainly in debates with friends, it's a very interesting notion.
Well, you just mentioned that you have these sort of discussions with friends. So what are the most interesting questions you get asked then when you're discussing different topics with people, and what are your answers?
I guess I hear two types of things a lot. One, I hear a lot of questions about kind of size and scale of Windows Live. People are always just impressed, you know, when you talk about the over 500 million active users, the 10 billion IM messages we're sending every day, the 8 billion, you know, email messages that flow through Hotmail, and just the size and scale. And I get a lot of questions around that. The second one, from a personal perspective, I always get the last job you held before Microsoft, you had started a company that at most was 7 people in the startup, and then you moved to Microsoft with 90,000 people. And doesn't that seem like two opposite ends of the spectrum? And I think the thing for me is, you know, obviously the number of employees is very different, but there are many notions that are actually very similar in both of those environments, which is part of the reason I've enjoyed both of those experiences. You know, whether it's the entrepreneurial spirit, whether it's being able to take, you know, a new idea and deliver impact with that. Obviously, that's done differently if you're 7 people writing code and, you know, I just go to my desk and write the code and release it, versus at Microsoft where you might think about, hey, this is a great idea. I'm going to want to release this to 100 million people. I need to think and release this very differently. But it's the same notion of, hey, I've got a great idea. I want to go make it happen. The focus on consumer services, rapidly changing environment, and then just working with really smart people that you learn from every day. There are actually many similarities that I would answer that question with. And then obviously benefits like not having to buy my own paper clips and worry about rent and process payroll and things like that. But those are probably the two big ones that I get asked about a lot.
You're sort of in touch with a lot of different kinds of people. And if you look at the past, present, and future, or, you know, can you name some people who really inspire you?
I think for me, the ones I talk about, you know, first, my parents, just a ton from, you know, an early age, thinking about how they gave of themselves to make other people's lives better, you know, particularly their children, how they worked really hard. It was a selfless and a level of commitment to family that I hope to emulate, you know, with my own children. And I think that I found just very inspirational. From more of a professional perspective, you know, you might expect this for a Microsoft employee, but for me, Bill Gates, he was someone I met for the first time 13 years ago. And just in an instant, it's just very clear how brilliant and driven he is to make important change and impact happen. And he's done that, you know, obviously in the technology space. And I'm very excited to see what he'll get done in his new nonprofit ventures. So both categories in very different ways, very inspirational to me.
Now we're down to our last question. If you could choose the topic area, what do you see as the top challenges facing us today, and how do you propose they be solved?
I think, you know, when I look at the technology space, one of the biggest challenges today is this notion of, you know, I talked about, you know, PC and how the PC is going to continue to evolve, and we're going to have all these devices. You know, we've got desktops and laptops and mobile devices, and now we've got slates and TVs and all these different types of devices. Some of those devices will have different input and output. You know, it's a screen, it's tactile, touch, all these different ways to interact with them. They'll have different hard drives, they'll have different processing power, graphics processing, all those types of things. And then on the other side, we've got the cloud and the internet, and we've got all these data centers and huge, vast quantities of data and how you search through that and find and filter things while maintaining privacy. Often we talk about these as different things, but I actually think the PC and cloud there are going to mesh together more and more. And it's how you bridge the best of both of those worlds, how you do that in a secure fashion, how you do that in a way where people's privacy is respected and they're in control of it, and then just enable just amazing things. When I think about that, you know, device that you could take across your house, and you put it down in one room, you pick up another one in another room. And so you went from, I was listening to my music player in one room, and then my TV in the other room can keep playing the music, and I go into my kitchen, and it continues. Or I think about how I'm sitting on my, you know, PC working on a Word document, and someone's sitting in another room, all across the world, and we can collaborate and edit. Just the possibilities by bridging those different devices and the cloud, I just think is amazing. At the same time, a lot of challenges on infrastructure and security and app models and development tools and all those types of things, and then delivering that, obviously, to people.
Well, Dharmesh, you know, when I talk to you, I can see these sort of elements of philosopher and executive and engineer and scientist, and I really enjoyed the time here today, and you have this just remarkable history and extensive history of successes, and, you know, we're really fortunate that you took the time today to come in and do this interview, so thank you.
No, Stephen, thank you very much, and thank you to your listeners. I very much enjoyed chatting with you, and have a good day.
I'm Stephen Ibaraki, and this concludes our exclusive interview with Dharmesh Mehta, Director, Windows and Windows Live Division, Microsoft Corp.